Hey there. I guess just by way of introduction, first of all, it's nice that it's a it's nice that it's Chabura. I hope that we'll be able to continue this for a while. The goal is just to obviously we're going to learn the sefer, but the eventually to turn this into a real musar vad, where we're working on very particular midos and particular areas of our Yir Shamayim to take it to the next shlav. The classic yeshivish mahalach for learning Aleph Shur is to learn the Mavo Klali, and then to skip, despite what he says about going through the Sefer in order. The classic Mahalach is to skip then to the third Chelek, and then to skip to the second Sefer, which was published actually 20 years later. This was published in the 60s. The second Chelek was not published until the 80s, and then go into the Vadim from there. And the reason they say to do that is because the Mavo sort of sets you up for what's going to come, and then you have the Das Atzmenu piece in the third Chelek, and all those pieces over there that are very critical towards let's say a hachana for a proper hachana anyway for midos work, and then to get into the midos work. So that's the plan, and hopefully we can keep it going for a while. Just everybody, I assume, knows who Revolbi is. Just to introduce Revolbi, he himself was a Baal Tshuva, who came from a semi-irreligious background. And in particular, his father was a known atheist. His mother was not an atheist. She was not traditional somewhat. And Revolbi used to say about his mother that she used to daven for him. And she was always davening for him. In fact, Revolbi, I heard from Rav Leib Kellerman that we know that one of the major themes of parenting is tefillah. And Revolbi credits his mother with his whole turnaround because he says she used to daven for me. So Memela, she was davening. Memela, since she was davening for me, so eventually I came around. The story of how he came around is also very fascinating. He was in the University of Berlin in the early 1930s, 1930 to 1933 1930 to 1933, he was in the University of Berlin. There was a Kiruv organization on campus, believe it or not. Where did what's his name go to do Kiruv in England? He went to Nottingham. Yeah, not just in Nottingham, but even in the University of Berlin.
Who's what's his name?
He used to be in the shul.
Avi.
Yeah, Avi Schwartz. He went to do Kiruv in the college campus in Nottingham. So they used to, in the 30s, in the early 30s also, there was a Kiruv organization on campus. They chapped him. He went from there to Hildesheimer, which was a known yeshiva in Germany at the time. And he went to the basic yeshivas that he was in Mir in Europe. He was by Rav Yeruchim Lavavitz. That was his main Rebbe, a short time by Rav Chatzkel, but his main Rebbe was Rav Yeruchim. He quotes Rav Yeruchim throughout the Sefer, very close with Rav Yeruchim, even though he only spent a couple of years there. He was saved, interestingly, he had an interesting story how he was saved from the Nazis, yimach shemam. There was a Talmud in the Mir whose family was in Sweden, and he went to Sweden to tutor the kids since he had a German, he couldn't escape to Russia with the rest of the Mir because he had a German nationality. So he ended up in neutral Sweden where he actually became the Rav throughout the war. And then he made his way to Eretz Yisrael. He learned in Petach Tikva and then ultimately became the Mashgiach in Be'er Yaakov, which is where basically Aleh Shor happened, and the Shmuzin in Be'er Yaakov. And then from there he was in Lakewood East and assorted yeshivas. You know, at the end of his life, he actually passed away not so long ago. He passed away in 2005. So certainly somebody that has a great shaychus to our generation.
Did he speak English too?
Yeah. He actually was very well known. He was very, very well known for his incredible insight into psychology without having ever learned psychology. In fact, I recently spoke. I won't say his name, but I recently spoke to a well-known psychologist, and. Not for me, but not that there's anything wrong with that. But I spoke to a well-known psychologist who's actually a Baal Tshuva himself, who actually he came to Eretz Yisrael and he learned in Chappelle's, and while he was in Chappelle's, he learned by Revolbi. And he says with all the psychology that he's learned, and he's a doctor, he's a very Choshev doctor, he learned in very Choshev universities, he said nobody touches Revolbi's toes. He said nobody touches Revolbi's toes in terms of the insight. And he said, as much as I quote, you know, the great psychologist, I quote Revolbi twice as much. He was a person of tremendous insight. Okay, so that's the plan, and that's who Revolbi was. I think just it would be we would also I think be making a mistake not to mention, you know, here in Cheshvan why it's dafka an appropriate time to start in Cheshvan. we know that all of the months have particular osios that are the kochos of those months, particular sdorim of the letters yud k vav k. Yeah. So, interestingly, the letters of yud k vav k that are for the month of Cheshbon are vav hey hey yud. From the pasuk Udvarai Hayayim Hazeh Yakum, my words today will be established. Udvarai Hayayim Hazeh Yakum, Vav Hey Hey Yud. So I heard a very interesting pshat that I want to share, and I think very very shaykh to what we're going to do. See, within Yud Kei Vav Kei, yeah, what's between the two hays? There's a vav. Now a vav has a dual role. On the one hand, we know that a vav is something that joins things together. Yeah, that's what it does. It's an and. Yeah, this and this. On the other hand, the vav is quite literally a mechitza. That's what it looks like. It separates things, yeah? Between this and this. So the and, on the one hand, joins things together, and on the other hand, it's a mechitza. Now, for us, we understand that a mechitza serves the purpose of bringing things together, right? If a person is, let's say, you know, people ask, you know, why do women have to sit behind the mechitza? It's just the opposite. A mechitza is something that brings a woman in. Without that, she wouldn't be brought in. Yeah. So there are certain tkufas that are called yud kei vav kei, that the hey and the hey, right, which in a deeper mystical sense is represented by keser and malchus, mother and daughter, without getting into that. But there are certain times that they need to be brought together in a separated type of way. Yeah, not always can two things be together in a straight, clear, pure way. There needs to be a mechitza that joins them. Yeah. On the other hand, sometimes there needs to be a pure, unadulterated, we remove the mechitza, so to speak, and the two hays can exist together. And that actually is the month of Cheshvan, which is a very misunderstood month. People think Mar Cheshvan means it's bitter because there's no Yamim Tovim. Well, that's true. But it's not bitter because there's no Yamim Tovim. Dahainu, we're sad that there's no Yamim Tovim. No. What we just went through in Elul and Tishrei, yeah, was a matziv where we were with HaKadosh Baruch Hu with mechitzas. Yeah. That's why you need an Elul, a Rosh Hashanah, an Asar Simei Tshuva, a Yom Kippur, a Sukkis, a Simchas Torah. It's all together, but b'derech within mechitzas. Yeah, that's why you have the Yomtiv is the mechitzah. It creates the event. Yeah. Creates the event for how we come together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Masha'en ken in Cheshvan, there is no event. It's like, do you remember what it was like right after Shavuot Brachos? That's Mar Cheshvan. It's not bitter that you're with your wife right after Cheshvan. It's that the Chasna's over. It's not anymore the event that gets us together. We're with each other in the most pure, unadulterated way. That's why it's called mar. Right? What happens, for example, with quinoa? Yeah? Quinoa, if you don't wash it off, it's very, very bitter. Yeah? If you do wash it off, it could be delicious. Again, assuming it's cooked right. Yeah? In yeshiva once, we had quinoa, and I tasted it, and it was not delicious. I came home, I asked my wife, I said, why is it that like somebody can mess up quinoa? She asked me, was it very bitter? I said, yeah, it was very bitter. She said, it's because they didn't wash it off. Yeah, mar does not always mean bad. Mar means there's no mechitzas left. We're just sitting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, if you're like me, and maybe you are, maybe you're not, could be you're a little uncomfortable with that. Because being with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, without any events, without any big drama, can be an uncomfortable experience. In fact, there's a beautiful story about Rav Elia Lapian. That Rav Elia Lapian walked onto a bus and he saw a Talmud of his in the back of a bus. You ever hear the story? He saw a Talmud of his in the back of a bus. And the Talmud is sitting and learning, and the Talmud glances up, you know, people are getting on the bus, and he sees that Rav Elia Lapian is getting on the bus. And he thinks that he's sitting with an open Gemara, sitting on the bus. And he's thinking to himself, oh boy. Like, this is great. You know, the Mashkiach is going to see me. He's going to be such a masmid. It's going to be unbelievable. You know, like, look at me. And the Rav Elia makes his way towards the Talmud, and the Talmud in his head is building it up. And Rav Elia puts his hand on the Talmud's shoulder, and the Talmud looks up like he was surprised, like, oh, I didn't see you there, yeah? And we all know that, like, we've done that a million times, yeah? And Rav Elia turns to him and he goes, what's the matter? You're afraid to be with your own thoughts? You understand? A little bit. Even sometimes just sitting on a bus, we can be uncomfortable with that because it's in a very direct way. That's just you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is no mechitza. There's no mechitza that there's nothing that brings you in. It's true. A person could, in a certain way, use even Gemara as a crutch. My Rebbe told me a ma'aseh with Rav Moshe Bix, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that they asked him about a certain very well-known Talmud Chacham who was mamish a terrible Baal Midos. A terrible Baal Midos. He wasn't a tzaddik, this person. He was just a very learned person. And Rav Bix said about him, he said, okay, he's a behemoth who wears tefillin. It sounds like a harsh thing to say, but if you think about it, it's true. Our inability to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a very direct way, if it's uncomfortable, it's precisely because we're uncomfortable with ourselves. And I think that's the greatest reason to learn Alei Shur. And I guess I'll make my pitch here. Tendency when it comes to these things, when a chabura like this is to get started and then it could peter out. I think it's incumbent upon us to make sure that doesn't happen. Because the only way that these types of things have any effect is if we don't let it peter out. You see, we are the vehicle where we meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's one of the things that I think we've been trained in a certain way to misunderstand, is we think we meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the mechitzas. Yeah, whether it's the Yamim Tovim, whether it's in my daily shiur, my learning, even my davening. Yeah, in a certain way, all of those things are obviously superb. I don't mean mezalzel and tefillah chas v'shalom. Yeah, but in a certain way, just being is the best way of being with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if we're uncomfortable with ourselves because we haven't done the appropriate mussar work, it's going to impact our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So dafka, I think now in the Zman of Cheshvan, where it's takamar and it's a little bit unadulterated and a little maybe more than a little uncomfortable for us, I think dafka now is the time to get started on the work and to make it real and to make a kabbalah that we're really going to try to stick this through. Having said that, it could be that there'll be times that I have to miss. Traveling to America and so on and so forth, but Bederach Klal, again, until it switches up with the shul, depending on how things go this month. But I think unless this doesn't work for people, and you'll let me know afterwards, I'd like to keep it on Thursday nights at 8:30. Again, if it's not good for people, please let me know, and we'll try to work it out. But I really want to make a big pitch. Again, obviously, if you want to bring others in, if you're feeling that it's valuable, kol hakavod. But I think there's a lot of value in having a good, strong chabura of guys really working together and not beating each other up, chas v'shalom, but being mechazik each other in a very strong way for this. So that's my pitch. Last but not least, we have a very fine group of people around the table. I talk enough during the day with my talmidim. I would like this to be a chabura. I'm happy to lead it. I'm happy to read and to share whatever insights I have. But please, I don't want to be talking the entire time. I think fakir. I think if people bring up, it'll contribute and it'll be more meaningful. Okay, stay there. Okay. Start with the following idea. I was on the phone with a Talmud today, a very dear Talmud of mine, who left Eretz Yisrael the last year. I think he was out of Eretz Yisrael. He went back to America. And I encouraged him, many of his rebbeim encouraged him. He knows a tremendous amount about cars. So we told him, become a mechanic. Shtaka, become a mechanic. In fact, I encouraged him, go become a mechanic, come back to Eretz Yisrael, be a mechanic here in Ramat Beit Shemesh, you'll make a fortune of money. An American-speaking, honest mechanic could clean up, yeah? I think an honest mechanic could clean up no matter what. But in Eretz Yisrael, certainly, it would be a rare commodity. So he calls me today. I ask him, how's it going? He tells me, Rebbe, I got the biggest mussar. I said, okay. And I told him, I said, I'm giving a shiur in mussar tonight, so maybe this is going to be perfect. And taka, it was. He's rebuilding this car, an old car. He's restoring a car. And the car, an engine has eight cylinders. This engine has eight cylinders. And there's a particular test that you have to perform on the engine to check the combustion levels on each one of the cylinders. I have no idea what any of that means, but he even told me the lashon I should use, that it should sound like I know what I mean. And I guess I gave it away, though. I'm sorry. And it was very strange. He was getting the same exact read for all eight of the cylinders, coming out the same exact number. And he was very upset because to figure out what it was going to do, I mean, you had to take the entire engine apart. It's going to take at least 4 hours to do that. Then he thought maybe a different thing it could be, but it's going to take 2 hours for that. And he was very frustrated. He said, "I should have done the test a while ago, and now I blew it." He was getting very frustrated. And he was in the shop, and his boss said to him, "Did you check your tool? Did you check the instrument? Maybe it's not the engine, maybe it's the instrument." And that's in fact was the problem. The engine was fine, the instrument was off. Yeah. So the biggest thing that I can start off with talking about Alei Shor is this is a question of calibrating our own instrument. Yeah, and as much as Rav Volbi shares with us, and he shares tremendous amounts about the Yomim Tovim and about Limud HaTorah and the value of Tefillah, and he has many, as we'll see, he has many, many beautiful Shtikach Torah here, but I think the real Yesod here is that the focus of Alei Shor is the calibration of the tool, which is ourself. And Rav Dessler writes that the way we perceive the world, right, how we perceive truth, is a function of our ability to perceive. And our ability to perceive is directly reflected on how we are calibrated as an instrument. Because to the degree that we have our own negiyas, that we want to do something, right, because all thought comes from will, so to the degree that we want something is going to impact the way we think about something. And the way we think about something is going to depend on how we perceive the truth. So often we don't perceive the truth, not because the truth is not readily available, but simply because our instrument hasn't been calibrated. So with that, I think we can start off. I'm going to skip the first paragraph just to get into it. He brings a fascinating Chavis Halavavos. I apologize, I didn't make photocopies. I wasn't in yeshiva to make photocopies. Anyone who wants, in general, this is the sefer we're going to be learning. It's readily available. Okay. Baal Chavis Halavavos Kosev Bahakdamah L'Sifra. This is what the Chavis Halavavos writes in his Hakdamah. Ha'adam Mechuber Minefesh V'Guf. V'Shneem Mitovis HaBorei Aleinu Ha'echad Nireh V'Hasheni Enu Nireh. A person is comprised of two parts, a nefesh and a guf. And both of them are given to us for good. They're both bestowed upon us, and they're good things. Ha'echad nireh v'hasheni enu nireh. Now listen how the Chavos HaLevavos describes the guf and the nefesh. Yeah? One is seen, and one is not seen. This is going to be critical in Rav Volbi's world. Ve'anachnu chayovim la'avodeso ba'avor zeh avodah galuyah va'avodah tzifonah. And because the guf is seen, and the nefesh is not seen, it obligates us to have two different types of avodas atzma, or two different types of avodah in the world, I should say. Yeah, one is a revealed avodah, and the other is a hidden avodah. Yeah, so the body, which is revealed, has one type of avodah, which is called the revealed avodah, and the nefesh, which is concealed, has another type of avodah, which is totally concealed. Hagaluya chayvus ha'ivarim k'me'atvila v'hatzayim. Now we know about the revealed avodas. We know about all the things we do. Yeah. Acha avoda hatzefayna hi chayvus alvavos, but the hidden avoda is the avoda of your lev. That's chayvus alvavos. Vehu, and now what is chayvus alvavos? Listen how he touches it. Vehu shne yached ha'elokim b'libo seinu v'shenamim bo b'toyrosoi v'shne kabel avodasu v'nira isoi v'nichna b'pana v'chulu. So what does the Chavis Halavavos write? The Chavis Halavavos is, it's not any action. It's not doing anything. It's the feeling that you have of hachna to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Of that presence, that living with that presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that is the Chavis Halavavos. So the revealed Avodah is the Avodah Saguf. That's the stuff we know about. That's a human doing, yeah? And then there's the Chovas HaLevavos, that's a human being. Yeah, I'm being with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can't see it, but we all know that we can sense it. Yeah, the truth of the matter is that we sense people who live with the Chovas HaLevavos, and we respect them. And the people that we see that are not living with the Chovas HaLevavos, that are only living with the Chovas HaGuf, we get a sense of that also. Again, not b'derech lashon hara, but It's nikkala ayin. When
what
a
does
person,
that mean? Like,
avodas haguf is you put on tefillin in the morning. That's avodas haguf. Yeah, you daven even. That's also avodas haguf. But living with the Rebbeinu Shalom in pnimius, in the internal way of being with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's l'chayvus alavavos. That sense of awe, the majesty of recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. Yeah, that's the avodah hatzfaina. I was telling Mordechai before, I just came back from a vacation with my wife. Quick 2-day vacation before the Zman starts, just to unwind. So we went to a place called Dor. I'm a big beach guy. I was a big beach guy back in the day, and hard to be a big beach guy now. Yeah, not so many opportunities, unless you want to go to the separate beaches during Ben Azmanim with all the Chevra. If you've been, I don't know why, but some reason in this country they didn't teach people about bathing suits. So either you have people that are mamish going fully clothed into the water, or they treat it like a giant mikveh. This is not the most gishmak way of going to the beach. Not, at least not the way I grew up, yeah? So we went to a place called Dor. Dor is, they have these igloos basically on the beach, yeah, right off the beach. And they have these islands that are about 50 feet out. And you can wade through the water to the islands. You can wade through the water to the islands. Which is amazing. So I went with my beach chair above my head. It's now Ben Azmanim. There's nobody there on the beach. I went out to the island, literally, private island. I'm sitting on a private island.
Where is this?
In Dor, right next to Nachshulim, right near Zichron Yaakov. It was great.
Yeah, that was good.
And it's really beautiful. And I'm sitting on the edge of this island, yeah, on the rocks on the edge of the island, with my feet in the warm Mediterranean water. And I'm sitting there, and I'm looking out at nothing. You're looking at just water as far as the eye can see. Now, I don't know if you're into this, but for me, this is like, I've arrived. You know, like, I don't have anywhere to go. I have my phone with me. I have nothing. And you're just sitting there, and you could think. You could think. And as I was sitting there, and I was thinking, like, watching the waves crash up against the rocks of the island, and just, I'm, like, thinking, this is a Ribbono Shel Olam experience. This is the power of the water is incredible. The power of the water, the sheer, not just the volume of it, just like when you look at it, it's never ending. It's never ending. I mean, it's not accidental that the sea was such a major deal. I mean, now, today, it's not, you know, people go on cruises, Costa Rica cruises, you know, all over the world, you know. I don't think there's many Titanic, although there was something recently, right? A couple of years back, there was a cruise that went down, yeah? But in general, there's not many Titanics. We've sort of, whatever this means, conquered the seas, yeah? But the sea is an incredible experience. That's an avodah tzofeinah experience. There's no tefillah going on, there's no chovos ha'evarim, there's nothing you can do but sit and be with the Rebbeinu Shalom. You can experience it. And that's a big mistake that people make, by the way. The Rebbeinu Shalom is an experience. He is an experience. That's what he is, right? That's what Chazal mean when they say that Yud Kei Vav Kei is Hoya Hoiva V'Yiyah. The experience of this world is an experience that takes place within the Rebbeinu Shalom. People all the time are trying to find God, right? So they go, I have to go, especially Israelis, go to India to find God, right? Which is obviously, a friend of mine actually came back from India. He told me that there's many, many signs that are in Hebrew there. Street signs that are in Hebrew. There's so many Israeli soldiers that Nebuch, after they leave the army, they have to go find spirituality. Why would they go to Yerushalayim? It's like us. We would never, you know, for those of us who come from America, we would never go, I never went to the, maybe I went once to the Statue of Liberty. I go to the Statue of Liberty. I'm a New Yorker. Yeah? See, if you're Israeli, I don't go to Yerushalayim. I mean, it's a terrible thing. I'm not going to go to Yerushalayim to go find spirituality. I'm going to go to India to sit by some guru. Yeah? So there's street signs. Nebuch in Ivrit, a crazy thing. The reason it's a silliness is because you don't have to go anywhere to find the Rebbeinu Shalom. The Rebbeinu Shalom is in every experience that we have, right? A baby being born, right? We all know. That's a godly experience. That's a godly experience. No, everyone, I remember when my first daughter was born. That's a godly experience, you know? All the comedians talk about that, right? I created you, I could take you away. That's what we say to our children, you know? I can make more of you. You know, it's a You feel a shtick like you're obviously it's sick, yeah. I'm saying you feel a shtick like a creator, right? There's a Ribbono Shel Olam experience there. Okay, so that's Avodah Geluya. That's the Guf Chovas Ha'Ivarim. I can't believe. I'm sure. That's why I have to work on my midos, you know. There's the Chovas Ha'Ivarim. That's all the things we do. That's not what we're talking about. This is all the things we are. All the things we want to be. This is very complex for people that don't know what it means to be. For people that have trouble being. Yeah, this is very difficult.
So it's like recognizing Hashem, feeling His presence, like He's Bodidus, right? Not like Yir Shamayim, that doesn't seem like that follows in this category.
Well, Yir Shamayim could follow in this category if it's just a function of the way that I am. In other words, Yir Shamayim is not something that I have to make a hinani muchanu mezumun l'kayim mitzvos Yir Shamayim. I have I won't say who it is, but a person I know very well. He's a very, very funny person. Every time his mother calls, he sees on the caller ID that his mother's calling. So he picks up the phone and he goes, "Oh, Ima, how are you?" You know, she always gets a big kick out of it. You know, like you don't have to make a hinani muchan mazuman over Yir Shamayim. Yir Shamayim is something you either are, it's not something you have, it's something you either are or are not. Am I a Yare Shamayim? It's not something I can be. It's not something I can do. It's something I have to be. Yeah? So I have to train myself to see the world in that way, coming from within me, that I am machnia myself before the Ribbono Shel Olam. That I'm somebody who recognizes the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm talking about, obviously, the whole movement over here. What we're about to do is to figure out how to do that. See, what's exciting about this, at least to me, the first time I went through the Sefer, is it's finally going to answer the question that we've been searching for all of our lives, which is, how do I connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Right? Because we learn, Baruch Hashem, everybody here learns. Right? Everybody here davens. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, in a very simple way, how do I feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How do I get in touch with that part of me that's able to connect on a deeper level? That's something we have a Meiridik hard time with. In fact, I heard from Rabbi Fran, the unbelievable idea. I don't know if I shared it with you, Donny, but it's a beautiful idea. It's from the Talmidei HaRamchal. It's a Loi Rav Lalechem V'loi Tzama Lamayim Kiyim L'shmaya Es Divrei Hashem. Right? In the times of Mashiach, nobody's going to be hungry for bread. Nobody's going to be thirsty for water. What are we going to be terribly starving for? Yeah, to hear the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Talmidei HaRamchal say that Lechem and Mayim, we know, are Mishalom for Torah. It means that in the times of Mashiach, there's going to be tremendous Limud HaTorah going on. 100,000 people are going to make a Siyum HaShas Daf Yomi. Yeah? Shiurim all over the place. And you should know, in all areas of Klal Yisrael, there's more and more Shiurim coming up. Yeah? Loi Rav Lalechem V'loi Tzama Lamayim. But what are we going to be terribly starving for? Kiyim L'shmai Es Devei Hashem. But nobody's connecting with the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's a scary thought. Nope. The shuls are packed.
When the Chavos Levavos wrote Chavos Levavos, and when Mrs. Shram wrote Mrs. Shram, and the introduction is like they say the same thing in this that you're saying, that why did I write this sefer? Because this isn't. Has it ever been any different? Maybe.
Yeah, It's been.
But I mean, excusing that you moved the door. I mean, you know, I understand
You're asking a very good question. I want to tell you something. This is a very important point. First of all, it's an excellent horror you're making. But you know what you don't have today that you had even 70 years ago?
Mm.
Is a grandmother who didn't know anything.
Mm.
She never left her shtetl. Never. She lived in a tiny little town in Europe. You know, people talk about the town of Mir. You know, I spoke to an Alter Mir once. He told me the whole town of Mir, there were 250 bachurim in the Mir, yeah? The whole town was 500 people. They comprised half the town. Yeah, and amongst there was the Rebbeim and their families. He told me the town of Mir was surrounded by a forest. Nobody left. Back and forth, you know, do a little business. You were in. That's where you were. Yeah, here you have a woman, an elderly woman. She never learned anything more than Sanu Re'ena. Yeah, she barely knew. She never went to Beis Yaakov. Yeah, there's no Beis Yaakov. Yeah, all Hilchos Kashrus she learned from her mother. Yeah, in fact, I can tell you, my grandmother. She should live and be well, who was not observant, yeah, but she kept kosher in her home. When I was doing smicha, and I was learning different halachas and kashrus. So my grandmother asked me, "What are you learning?" This is when she was still capable of talking to me. And I thought I was learning Hilchos Melicha. And my grandmother said, "Oh, I know exactly what to do." And she started going through one by one. Here's a woman who wasn't observant. All of the halachos. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, "Grandma, how do you know this?" You know, it's like, she didn't. She was not. She, again, a great person. Yeah, but she was not an observant person. Both of my parents are Balei Tshuva. "Grandma, how do you know this?" She goes, "What do you mean? I learned it from my mother." So there was, and that woman, you should know, would sit. Not, I'm saying this elderly woman back in Europe used to sit and cry by Hadlakas Neros. Or like Revolbi says about his mother, that she used to sit and daven for him, even though she was not observant. She was traditional. Yeah.
I also heard that just recently on tape, like, I think it was very common in the show, like, they would stand, even the woman, they would stand up for all of Yom Kippur. Like,
yeah.
The worst of the week, you know,
yeah.
Like, they would stand, that's just kind of the whole Yom Kippur.
Yeah, it wasn't, and I'm telling you, even in Tanya, he speaks about the Kal Shebekalim, yeah, will give up their life for the Ribbon Shalom. There was an intuitive sense of the Ribbon Shalom. In fact, if we had to say it in a very strong way, we would say that they did not believe in God. They didn't believe in God. They knew him.
Yeah.
It wasn't a belief. They didn't have to believe it. It was clear. It wasn't that it was, you know, it's like if you're standing in the field and the sun is shining, do you have to prove that there's a sun? You know? They didn't need any fancy proofs. They didn't need permission to believe or permission to receive. They felt they had 100% permission, you know? They did not need, and again, I think all these Svarim are amazing. They didn't need any fancy scientists who went to MIT to show them mathematically. They knew there was a Ribbon Shalom. They didn't believe in it. They knew it. Now, Enoch Nami, what they were writing back then, yeah, was on their level. Like the Rambam in Hilchos Deis. The terrifying Rambam in Hilchos Deis that talks about that if everybody around you is going crazy, you have to run away to the Midbar. The Rambam says, Kemo bizmanenu. Like in their times, everyone was going crazy. If the Rambam only knew what was going to happen... You know, I told, I always tell this to my Talmidim. You know, the concept of Facebook is such an incredibly insane concept. You know, to have thousands of friends that you have nothing to do with, yeah, and to call them your friends is it's insane. It's literally insane. We're living in an insane time, yeah. My wife always says from one of her Rebbeim that Eretz Yisrael is a sane asylum. It's for the last bastion of normal people that are left in the world. You know, maybe. Right? Maybe. Yeah, and for those... and unfortunately, it's difficult that, yeah? I remember that I one time heard Rav Brevda. Maybe you ever hear Rav Brevda speak? Rav Brevda was as sharp as they come. I remember he got up to speak one time, and he goes, "From whom does HaKadosh Baruch Hu get nachas? From the billion Chinamen? No. From the billion Africans? No. From Klal Yisrael. And who from Klal Yisrael?" And he went on to say, again, Rav Brevda in his own beautiful style, you know, he went on to say, only from the Bnei HaYeshiva. You know, that was like his message to the Bnei HaYeshiva. And obviously, if you're holding in Rav Brevda, you understand how to take that in. You know, it doesn't mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't get nachas from everybody. He was empowering the Yeshiva Baruch Hu to feel, you know, that they are a taka, a very, very special group of people. But, yeah, you have to... It's not normal what's going on in the world today. Yeah? So, was it any better? I think it was.
Right.
It's crazy, though, that it was.
When there was that blackout the other day during Sukkot, it gave me a really real insight into what could be if you could just switch off. We were out, and we came home, and my kids went upstairs and went in the street, maybe like all the other kids. And so I went to my sukkah and I found some candles and I like lit one or two or three actually. And then I took a sefer and started reading it. I was like, wow, there's only me in the sefer because everything else is dark. There's nothing else. There's nothing. And then I had to go somewhere in the house. So I took the candle and walked around. And as I walked, each step was like, I thought it out because I couldn't really see so well. And I didn't want to set fire to the house.
It was just understanding.
And it was like, you know, and it was like, wow, this is good.
Yeah.
It's life is really special without tons of other things, like, you know, like things that you don't need.
Things, yeah.
And so what the sense was we're unfortunately in a generation where you can't go back to something where life as simple as only a Kodesh Baruch Hu and you and a relationship and things and, you know, And so, unfortunately, the great things we have are only taking us away from Kodesh Baruch Hu by the look of it.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, what could you do?
There's a bumper sticker that says, "The greatest things in life are not things." It's Avram. It's not accidental that marriages all over the place are failing left and right. We can't have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can't have a relationship with ourself. How do we expect to have a relationship with a wife? Yeah, that's already difficult. It's Ezer Kenegdo. At least the Rebbeinu Shlomo we know is on our team. You know, it's a total breakdown.
Why doubt? Is it just this past 70 years, or like what we consider now from the previous 70 years for them? They look back 70 years, and
yeah,
they're
for
looking
sure they
at it the same way we're looking in the past. Right?
It's true. It's always been like that. It's always been more and more difficult as we get closer and closer in these last minutes before Mashiach. It gets even more difficult. It's going to get even worse, but that's encouraging, because as it gets harder, it becomes more meaningful. You don't send the schlocky soldier to do the very difficult mission. We are the most elevated neshamas that have been in the world since the history of the world. The tzaddikim are planted in every generation to do what needs to be done for that generation. It is clear, and many tzaddikim have said this, it's clear that in our dar, yes, we are the farthest from Har Sinai, so our perception of the Torah is very, very difficult, but these last klipas that we have to defeat, which are enormous klipas, yeah, there was never a musug of carrying around what we carry around in our pocket. You know, there was you think about a wagon driver, 70, you know, a wagon driver in Poland. Imagine if you were riding next to him, and all of a sudden, you took out a cell phone and called somebody across the world. What type of magic do you possess? Yeah, this is on the one hand, an enormously beneficial tool. On the other hand, a very dangerous tool. Yeah, it's not like our challenges are not like previous challenges. The previous challenge, you could create a mechitza and keep something away. You could. Today, it's come out impossible. You know, you're not going to be able, the way that the world is going, you're not going to be able to walk into a bank soon. There won't be a bank. There won't be a person. I remember tolls. You guys remember tolls? Yeah. You know, my wife and I walked by. You actually paid a person. You saw a person and said, "Have a good day." And they looked back at you and said, "No." I remember going, even now I don't have Easy Pass when I go to America. So I have to go to the two toll lanes that are left, yeah, where the line is like, you know, thousands of yards long. I finally get to the person. I make sure to wish them a good day. You should see these people's faces. Because people treat them like the easy pass. I'm just going through. Nobody's saying hello. My Rosh Shiva used to say, you should wish everyone you see a good morning. Now, I know what you're going to say. It's very hard to wish people a good morning. Because I have a good Eitzah for you. You should mean it. Yeah? See, if you say good morning to these people, it's like, wow. My wife and I were walking by the other day. We saw two places where payphones used to be. They're ripped out. Because who in the right mind would use a payphone? Do you remember Bezek cards? Bezek cards? Asimonim? Yeah, use a payphone. I remember having to wait online for a phone. Wait online for a phone now. Nobody waits online for a phone. This is a very difficult door. So who do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends to wipe away these klipas? The worst neshamas or the best neshamas? Of course it's the best neshamas.
But most people are failing them.
Maybe.
The best neshama, why are most people failing?
It's a very difficult nisayon. By the way, most people have been taught that they're going to fail, so of course they fail. Most people think that you read the Sadaris means I'm a shvacha Jew. Right? The only thing that I could say about my generation is that we are the worst right now, but don't worry, there's another generation coming soon. They're going to be even worse than us. It's a badge of honor. You speak to Talmidim today. Yeah? And I, we were all like this already, yeah? But if you have a kid who went to a pretty good high school and he comes out from a pretty good class, so he says, yeah, I went to a pretty good school, I was in a pretty good grade, right? If you have a Talmud that comes from a class that was just the most god-awful class in the history of the school, do you know what type of pride they talk about it? They say, we were the most deviant, terrible class that ever walked the face of, insert high school here, yeah? People walk around today with so much more of a pride that they're low. They've been taught to be low. So of course we're failing. So, Rav Huttner already said, Navardik Musar is dead. Navardik Musar is not for this door. There's only Slobodka Musar.
Beating yourself up.
Was it? Yeah, yeah. So you can't, it's usser. A person has to know godless adam. Volbi writes about that extensively, that there's no, and hopefully we're going to get there, there's no inyan today of saying, I'm not great. If you failed 100 times and you succeed once, you should know that that one success is bigger than anything you could ever imagine. Say about the Rishna Rebbe, that the Rishna Rebbe said that in Ikvus of the Mashiach, a Jew who does even one mitzvah is on the same level as him.
Yeah, Rav Waxman gives you on the internet.
Yeah.
He quoted Rav Yeruchim. Rav Yeruchim said that in his time, Rav Yeruchim, before the internet, before everything, you know, if a person does a mitzvah, it's mamish, you know, relatively speaking, he's going on a higher level than people who did in the previous doors, because
right,
the circumstances are so much harder to be shown to a mitzvah, you know, at this point than it was before.
Right.
So
yeah,
I'm saying, imagine now with everything, you know, at the palm of your hands, you have everything. Imagine the power of doing mitzvah, like being a shomer.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's partially incredible. There's no question.
So Rav Yochum wrote that he didn't want to write how great it was for a Jew in his time, the shomer mitzvah. They didn't want them to be baligai. He didn't want to write how amazing it was.
They would have that. They would have that nesayon. We wouldn't have that nesayon.
Right. So saying, can you imagine now with all the taivas and all the nesayonos and everything?
You know, I want you to know, I gave a shiur to my boys, telling them how great they were. Yeah. And you know what their response was? Come on, Rebbe. A person today can't even believe that they're great. I gotta tell you, I gave my Kol Nidre Joshua this year to the boys was, you are innocent. And you know what most of them said to me afterwards? I said, we're not. I said, you are. You are. Again,
that starts into the shiva.
Yeah?
Because they're not accepting of the fact that they can become innocent.
Yeah.
It's a scary thing.
They don't even believe that there's a part of them that's innocent. They believe about themselves that they're so corrupted that that's it. It's terrible. It's a terrible thing. You know, again, not to be a kaifer b'ikr, yeah, but it's okay, there's just a couple of us, yeah?
Is it being recorded?
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. I don't mind if people know. Imagine your wife, chas v'shalom, just one day, walked out the door. And she left, and there was dirty dishes in the sink, yeah? And for 30 years, she doesn't come back. Imagine for 30 years, she doesn't come back. You've got no idea where she is. She drops you a postcard every now and again, just to let you know she's alive, yeah? So for 30 years, you have to raise all the kids, make all the lunches, you know, marry them off. You mamish do everything. 30 years later, one day, she just walks in. She walks in. And there's dirty dishes in the sink. Does she have a right? Imagine if she says to you, I can't believe I've been gone for 30 years and you still haven't done the dishes? Are you kidding me? Where have you been for 30 years? Yeah? Again, not chas v'shalom to say that the Rebbeinu Shalom is not here, but we have been without the Beis HaMikdash already for thousands of years. We get postcards from the Rebbeinu Shalom, little postcards. Again, we have. It's our job to decipher these postcards, but they're little postcards, little events throughout history. The Rebbeinu Shalom reminding us that he's still here. In between a Crusades and a Holocaust, every once in a while we have a postcard the Rebbeinu Shalom sends us. Yeah, and with all that, yeah, most Jews feel badly about their Yiddishkeit. What do you mean you feel badly about your Yiddishkeit? If the Rebbeinu Shalom was here, if you had a Beis HaMikdash and you were being makriv karbanos and you saw a fire coming down like in the shape of a lion consuming the karbanos, I imagine, again, I'm not saying it'd be easy, but I imagine it would be easier to serve the Rebbeinu Shalom. We go to a kotel and where there's overgrown moss and a giant gold dome in the background, and we cry out to the Rebbeinu Shalom, we want to be better. Again, not to be chas v'shalom chutz b'dik, but and where is the Rebbeinu Shalom throughout this? Obviously, he didn't leave, yeah, but he pulled himself back on purpose. But he pulled himself back, and yet most Jews just feel an innate sense of I should be doing better, and that level of guilt, yeah. Even your question, what do you mean? We're the best. We are the best. We're doing this with, we are loyal servants to the Rebbeinu Shalom, even when he is nowhere to be found. That is incredible. I were failing plenty. Who, Mehecha Tesa, that's called failing. That's not called failing. You are innocent. And I'm telling you, you tell this to people, and they don't know how to swallow it. They don't know what to do with it. No? Even us.
I wasn't even referring to us. I was the majority of the Jews, 90% of them, whatever the percentage, though, aren't religious. So isn't that mean a failing?
I want to tell you, maybe we'll finish with this, yeah? I'll tell you a story about my Uncle Al. Uncle Al is not an observant Jew. He lives out on the tip of Long Island. Yeah, to go out to Uncle Al, you got to drive for a long, long way. Yeah. Again, the nicest guy in the world. The nicest guy in the world. Every year we used to go out to Uncle Al for Thanksgiving dinner. And you're talking about real Americana, carve the turkey. Everyone had to say what they were thankful for. Yeah, I one time, whatever, I'll tell that story a different time. I one time brought Yitzi Haber to this Thanksgiving dinner. He's a person who only has one leg. His other leg is prosthetic. So everyone's going around the table saying what they're thankful for. It was actually the year after 9/11, so everyone was like really, it was like really serious. And he's like, "I'm thankful for Leggy." I was like, "What's Leggy?" And he pulls up his prosthetic leg at the table. We took a real American family. Apple cider at the table, the whole nine yards. He came to Eretz Yisrael on a tour, on a secular tour. They brought him to Jordan, to what's that seven? They have one
Petra.
Of the to Petra. Yeah, they brought him all over the place. Where literally? Where did they not bring him? They didn't bring him to the Kotel. Imagine he came on a tour. He was here for 2 weeks. They didn't bring him to the Kotel. They brought him to the Dome of the Rock,
right,
but not to the Kotel. So my father begged him. It's my father's sister's husband. My father begged his sister and Uncle Al, "Do me a favor. Stay in Israel for an extra week. Let me show you around. Let me give you a tour for a week." And they decided to stay. They extended their trip. They decided to stay. On the last day that they were here, my father took them to the Kotel. And Uncle Al, when he saw the Kotel, he started tearing up. And by the time he got to the Kotel, he was sobbing like a child. A retired man in his late 60s, early 70s at this point, yeah? Not early 70s, late 60s, yeah? And he's bawling like a baby, uncontrollably. And my father's with him, doesn't know what to do. Not an observant man. Just crying like a baby. He went out, he bought tefillin on the spot. My father went, he said, "I want to do something." My father took him to a sefer right there in the old city, he bought him tefillin. I can't tell you if Uncle Al wears them every day. I hope he does. But the second he saw the Kotel, something opened up. You just have to, you don't have to convince people to be Jewish. They are Jewish. Jewish means I'm in a relationship with the Rebbeinu Shalom. There's no such thing as Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah? It doesn't make any sense. What does that mean? If the job of a husband is to provide for his family, take care of his wife, you know, emotionally, and I don't know, and learn Torah. Yeah, let's say that's the job of a Jewish man. And all I do is learn Torah. Am I Reformed? Yeah. Or if I take care of my kids but not my wife, am I Conservative? No, I'm either in a relationship or I'm not in a relationship. Yeah. So you don't have to tell people. You don't have to tell people, convince them to be Jewish. They're in a relationship with the Rebbeinu Shalom. Just expose them to that relationship. The problem is not enough people get exposure. They don't know what the Torah is. They are interested. I'm telling you, none of my cousins are religious. None of them. And I'm telling you, they're enormously fascinated with it. They're so close to the Rebbeinu Shalom, they just don't know what to do with it. Nobody's ever exposed them to it. Because there's that barrier. But I'm telling you, today there's more kirov happening in the world than ever before. Not just because a lot of people have gone off, but because people are starving for it. So even those people, that also is part of the Rebbeinu Shalom's plan, to bring back those nitzotzos. Those people that are going out and doing the kirov on the college campuses. I always tell people, in my next gilgal I want to come back as the Chabad Shliach of the Caribbean. That's a great gig. No, that's an amazing gig. You don't have to do much. The truth sells itself. I think part of the, if you ask me, part of the problem is that it's we, the Rebbeim, who maybe have a little bit of a problem with it ourselves, that we're overselling. So you have to do all these fancy things to try to convince a kid. You don't have to convince anybody. It's not something that... And by the way, all the arguments for convincing people about the Rabbeinu Shalom, you can find counter-arguments. And if they want to find counter-arguments, they will find counter-arguments. Like Rav Elchanan says, Yelo susuruch acharei levavchem acharei neichem zuminos. What does that mean? It means you had something you wanted to do. That's what prevented you from believing. Yeah? It's not a question of belief. You're in a relationship or you're not in a relationship. By the way, think about it. Those people who had the schus of coming back, think about what it took. I know what it took for my parents. Yeah, I'm born on the top of the mountain. I have it easy. Yeah, but the people who struggled to get up that mountain, you're telling me those neshamas are not the most incredible neshamas?
I think the difficulty is that if a person was that person who got to the top of the mountain, even though he might be the most elevated neshama, the fact that he doesn't feel like that makes it very contradictory.
Right. Right. And then the people born on the top of the mountain always feel like, and I also don't feel like I'm special because I was born on the top of the mountain. And we all have these very unhealthy feelings of unworthiness, that we are not worthy of the Rabbeinu Shalom's love, that we are not worthy of the Rabbeinu Shalom's attention. And it's the reason that Chassidus is so big today, because Chassidus is telling people much more than the Litzvisha world, the Rebbeinu Shalom does care about you, and people want to believe that they're worthy, but they don't, which comes from a basic lack of self-respect that we ought to have for ourselves, because you are a chelik of the Rebbeinu Shalom. You are an emanation of the Rebbeinu Shalom. Yeah? You don't have to become godly, you are godly, like a ray to the sun. Yeah? You would never separate a ray from the sun. It doesn't even make any sense. Could you say, that's not the sun, that's a ray of the sun? You are a godly emanation. In Kabbalah, the way it's expressed, which I think is fascinating, is if freedom of choice, let's say freedom of choice, Bechira Chavshus, let's say that's a high level, yeah? So where does the Rabbeinu Shalom express Bechira Chavshus? No, if Bechira Chavshus is perfect, where's the Rabbeinu Shalom's Bechira Chavshus? The answer is, you are the expression of the Rabbeinu Shalom's Bechira Chavshus. Yeah? Where's the Rabbeinu Shalom's expression of overcoming challenge? Yeah, isn't that part of perfection? Becoming perfect? You are the expression of the Rabbeinu Shalom's becoming perfect. You are not other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Ein Od Melvado sense of the word. Of course, the Rabbeinu Shalom gave us the feeling that we're other. That's what we serve him with. But for a Jew to say that I am other from the Rabbeinu Shalom, that's what Ein Od Melvado means. Ein Od Melvado means that I am a chelek Elokam Mimala, and everything in this world is an emanation from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is no existence outside of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if we don't exist outside of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how could we not be worthy? Doesn't even make any sense. Make sense? Yeah? Alright, we'll stop here for today.
Most likely people don't know that.
No, we have to teach them that.
Right.
They're looking for the Rabbeinu Shalom. It's the silliest thing. Where are you looking?
That's what Rabbalovsky said once, maybe something else. The reason why people are not becoming from is because they only go to Shul Shani Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
The after the 2 days were like, you know, Yom Kippur especially, you know, we were like, you know, pounding our chests and like saying, tell where we are, you know.
Who will live?
We're emphasizing how low we are. People don't want to have any.
Yeah, and the Sana Tokev is not getting anyone to come closer to the Rabbeinu Shalom unless they're, you know.
And the Holocaust.
Unless, yeah, right, exactly. Everything today is the Holocaust.
Yeah,
and
the Holocaust is like a big Jewish thing, which is like, you know, the most terrible thing, and that we're Dafka.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. There's no Jewish pride because there's no. They don't. Who would want to be a part of it? I wouldn't want to be a part of it. If somebody told me you're a part of a nation that's been persecuted for thousands of years, and the only time I go to shul is to listen to somebody wail who will live and who will die, yeah.
Join us now.
Yeah, come be a part of it. Who wants to be a part of that? Rav Huttner told Rav Reifeld when he started Shayashiv, he goes, "I'll give you three rules: don't ever take a partner, yeah, because you just end up in a machlokes. Don't expect any akar satov from talmidim, and nobody ever got inspired by the concept of Gehenna."
He said the exact same thing to Rav Neich.
Is that right?
The exact same thing.
The third one I don't remember.
Yeah.
He said the third one.
And he said, and he tried
no.
all three of them.
And he was right.
He thought, and he said he was right. He took partners and it didn't work, and they tried talking about Gehenna.
Gehenna is not inspiring anyway.
He said the exact same thing.
That's so funny. I heard it from Rav Weingott from Spot. Told me that Rav Huttner told it to Rav Reifeld.
The same Rav Huttner.
I guess maybe it was a...
he's consistent.
He's consistent.
One thing, we knew he's consistent anyway.
It's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing that the only. By the way, it goes a lot to the to the way that we deal with the challenges of today's dor, because if the challenge of today's dor is to tell them that they're great, and the only thing that they're hearing from us is you can't, you can't, you can't. No, it's very hard for them to take in. They don't believe that they're great, and the only thing they're seeing is a restriction. This is very hard for them. It's very. I don't want to do this. And you know what? I don't blame them. Rav Freifeld said that. Rav Freifeld used to say, he said, if the only way you can get people to follow Yiddishkeit is to aser everything else, then there's a problem. It's certainly not the way of the Gedolim today to deal with that. And by the way, every time we hear all the stories that when these kids who have a difficult time go to the Gedolim, they feel like $1 million. They know, the Gedolim know how to make them feel like $1 million. And we all remember, I remember my Rebbeim and the compliments they paid me. Now, I had Rav Mordechai Finkelman as a Rebbe in 7th grade. For those who know him, he's a Mashgiach today in Ar Chaim. Back then he was a 7th grade Rebbe. I can tell you that Rav Finkelman made every Talmud feel special. Now I remember those feelings today. How many years later are we talking about already? You know, over 20 years later, I still feel those same feelings. You know, there's no, today, to beat these kids down, to aser everything, it's not, it's nobody's going to be inspired by that. Nobody's going to say, oh, I can't do this and this and this. I really want to be a part of it. Okay, b'seder. Mitzvah Hashem will continue next week. Hopefully we'll get more into the Sefer. But again, the general avodah is going to be to understand the Chayvas HaLevavos, to get in touch with that feeling, that regesh of Yiras Hashem, Hachnot to the Rebbe
Nishlo. You said you recorded this?
Yeah, for those who want.
So what's...